Welcome back to the Brittany Hughes Show. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're having a wonderful week. So far, we've got an explosive new story out from NPR this week. Not a story, you know, actually reported by NPR, not that kind. They don't report stories anymore. They don't report actual news anymore. No. I'm talking about a story about NPR and about the rabid left-wing media bias going on there, which is not a surprise to anybody who's been paying attention. That's not really the story. But what happened this week does show the absolute rot at the heart of the American media machine. And it's a rot that's been festering for years now, to the point where some of the CEOs at these news networks, including NPR, are now admitting it out loud without any fear whatsoever of the consequences, because they've been so brainwashed by their own idiocy, their own extremism, that they actually believe it is their job to tell you what to think. Not to give you information, not to give you facts, not to pursue truth so that you can be armed with it and then make up your own mind with your own brain and the eyes and ears that God has given you. No, it is their job to tell you what to think and to cherry pick information to curate an opinion in the American public. Because there is no more objective truth. There's just what you believe, right? That's the line we've been fed now. Here's the new NPR CEO, Catherine Mayer, who gets a partially taxpayer-subsidized salary of about $500,000 a year to head up the National Propaganda Radio. The National Public Radio. She's been in the position since March, so she hadn't been there long. And it did not take long for people to figure out that this was another rabid left-wing hack who is completely throwing journalism under the bus in favor of activism. This was Mayer speaking at a TED Talk in 2022 about how truth is apparently subjective.
But the people who write these articles, they're not focused on the truth. They're focused on something else, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years of working with these brilliant folks, I've come to believe that they are onto something, that perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. Now, that is not to say that the truth doesn't exist, nor is it to say that the truth isn't important. Clearly, the search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things. But I think if I were to really ask you to think about this, one of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience and all forms of culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths. And so in the spirit of that, I'm certain that the truth exists for you and probably for the person sitting next to you. But this may not be the same truth.
This is an incredibly alarming thing to hear from someone who just became the CEO of a major news network. This is incredibly alarming. Not only do you have Mayer here completely rejecting the idea of truth, there's no the truth, there's just your truth, right? And your truth can be different from the person sitting next to you, which of course means that there is no real truth. There's just what you believe to be the truth. You can take irrefutable, provable facts and you just run them through the spaghetti strainer of your feelings and your beliefs and what you want and need to be true to validate your own opinions and hypotheses and the way that you see the world. And out the other end comes your truth. And if that's different than someone else's truth, well, that's fine. Everybody can just have their own. As a matter of fact, according to her, we should actually be wary of searching for the truth or trying to learn what truth is, because it gets in the way of actually doing something. That's what she says, right? Our reverence for the truth, which according to journalistic standards is the pinnacle, right? You chase truth at all costs. You go where the evidence and the facts lead you. And you are not swayed one way or the other in your pursuit of truth. And here you have a CEO of NPR saying that a reverence for truth is a bad thing that must take a back seat to, quote, getting things done. Like the left's agenda, I guess, right? We wouldn't want the left's, you know, climate change platform, for example, or, you know, LGBTQ gender war or socialism to run into a roadblock of people standing there with their facts and their logic and their math, right? That would get in the way. So it's important not to have a reverence for truth because that would stymie their activism. That would stymie their agenda. And we can't have that. So just forget about the truth. Your truth is whatever you believe it to be. And by the way, we're going to selectively feed you information in order to curate that belief. This is the head of one of the largest media machines in the country, one of the most powerful because it gets tax dollars to churn out its government-funded disinformation. Oh, and by the way, this is not the first time she has taken aim at the truth, Catherine Mayer here, or the people who are relying on the First Amendment to protect their right to speak the truth. Here's Mayer speaking to the Atlantic Council about how the First Amendment is the number one challenge because it's a bit tricky to censor voices that push back against the state-funded propaganda machine.
The number one challenge here that we see and is, of course, the First Amendment in the United States is a fairly robust protection of rights. And that is a protection of rights both for platforms, which I actually think is very important that platforms have those rights to be able to regulate what kind of content they want on their sites. But it also means that it is a little bit tricky to really address some of the real challenges of where does bad information come from and sort of the influence peddlers who have made a real market economy around it.
Can't have that, right? It's a little bit tricky, right? That dadgum First Amendment. It's important, she says, that, you know, news platforms like hers have the First Amendment so that they can, quote, regulate what goes up on their platforms. We got to have some regulation, right? We got to make sure that only the stories that we want to go out actually go out. And we've got to make sure that it falls in line with the narrative here that we're looking to push. So we like the First Amendment because it gives us the right to say we don't want that, right? Just as the First Amendment gives you the right to speak, it also gives you the right to not speak and not say things that you don't believe, or at least it's supposed to, unless, of course, you're, you know, a Christian baker. But for NPR, the First Amendment is a good thing because it allows them to regulate what goes up on their platforms or their websites or their radio programs or, you know, their TV channels or whatnot. So the First Amendment is a good thing because it protects the machine as much as anybody else. But when it comes to individuals using the First Amendment to say things like, I don't know, you know, I don't trust a hastily rolled out vaccine. Maybe we shouldn't be forcing people to inject themselves with it. Or, you know, they found Hunter Biden's laptop with a whole bunch of sketchy information about his dad who's running for president. Maybe we should talk about that. Well, see, that's disinformation. And the First Amendment now becomes a, quote, challenge to be overcome because we can't have anybody thinking for themselves or, you know, God forbid, saying things in public that might start a conversation. We can't have people sharing stories that the media wants to cover up or, quote, regulate. Because after all, remember, our reverence for the truth shouldn't get in the way of getting things done. It's about pushing the agenda, accomplishing the goal, brainwashing the public, not actually seeking and revealing the truth. So why is all of this important? It's important because the bias over at NPR, which is not anything new, but has only escalated in recent years, has gotten so bad that a senior NPR editor of more than 25 years just announced his resignation over left-wing bias at the station, saying that it has gotten so bad, so glaring, that he can no longer in good conscience remain at this network. So Uri Berliner wrote a scathing piece for the Free Press just last week. It's a 3,500 word essay. I highly encourage you to go look it up and read it, blasting NPR for intentionally ignoring stories like the Hunter Biden laptop story. Remember that back in 2020? Trump-Russia collusion that wasn't? COVID-19? And he exposes how all of these stories were run through a bias machine to determine what was written about, what was ignored, what was reported as fact, what was downplayed as lies, even when they weren't. Now, remember, Uri Berliner is a guy who is anti-Trump. He says right here in his essay, he makes no bones about it. He does not try to mince words or pretend that he's anything other than what he is. He says right there in his essay that he voted against Trump twice. This is not some pro-Trump MAGA champion who found himself in NPR's newsroom, which would be like finding, you know, Frosty the Snowman hanging out with Satan in hell. He's not a Trump guy. But he says, look, I might not have supported Trump. I didn't like him, but we were obligated as a news source to cover him fairly, just like we should everyone else, because that's what journalists do. He says, quote, but what began as a tough, straightforward coverage of a belligerent, truth-impaired president veered toward efforts to damage or topple Trump's presidency. This was no longer about calling out falsehoods, which, if that's your goal with a president, then there should you know, be smoke rising up from the gears of places like NPR under Joe Biden, who can barely formulate a sentence without telling a gigantic whopper, most of which he's been repeating since the 70s, has already been called out on back when people, you know, actually dared to do so. If you're going to cover a president for telling lies, I mean, I don't think you have to look much farther than the one that we've got in office right now. And here's Berliner saying that's where it may have started for some of us, but NPR actually started to take on an agenda of attacking the Trump administration to the point of actually doing it harm. That was their goal. That was their intent. That wasn't a side effect of reporting truth. That was the aim. He says persistent rumors that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia over the election became the catnip that drove reporting. At NPR, we hitched our wagon to Trump's most visible antagonist, Representative Adam Schiff. We remember him, right? That would be the same Adam Schiff, remember, who helped strong-arm social media sites like Facebook and YouTube into deliberately censoring the Hunter Biden laptop story ahead of the 2020 election. He used his position as chair of the House Intel Committee to push this theory, this rumor that was reported as gospel, that the Hunter Biden laptop story was Russian disinformation that had originated in the Kremlin. He also pushed baseless Russia collusion allegations against Trump. That was fine. But we couldn't have it getting out that the evidence on Hunter Biden's laptop suggested that old Joe here was, you know, abusing his VP power and taking a cut from his kids' business schemes. We couldn't have that. And that's who NPR was relying on as their source of information. A serial liar who abuses his power. Berliner goes on to say, quote, but when the Mueller report found no credible evidence of collusion, NPR's coverage was notably sparse. Russiagate quietly faded from our programming. Unbelievable. You spend years pushing the narrative that Trump colluded with Russia, which was based on false allegations, stuff like the Steele dossier, which was little more than toilet paper for all of its, you know, for all that it was truthful. But when the Mueller report came out and basically exonerated Donald Trump of all of these allegations that had been levied against him and his campaign and his family and his administration for years, all of a sudden NPR got real quiet. There was no mea culpa. There was no coming out and reporting, hey, turns out this wasn't actually true. They got real quiet real quick, right? Because it was never about reporting the truth. It was about pursuing an agenda. And when that agenda hit a roadblock, it suddenly just went away. Same with the Hunter Biden laptop story. Remember that back in 2020? The New York Post published the story and it went virtually ignored by all major left-wing media outlets. Social media sites censored it. You literally could not share the New York Post link. This was a link to a news article from a legitimate media website without getting booted off of Twitter and having your account suspended. I remember this. This was a real problem. If you mentioned the story in a video, YouTube would flag it and take it down, and you risked losing your entire page. These were serious challenges for us over at MRC TV. We grappled with them at the time because we were trying to report on this credible story that was incredibly important leading up to a presidential election that implicated a major candidate. And it ended up being 100% substantiated. In fact, there was never any plausible reason to question whether or not it was true that this was, in fact, Hunter Biden's laptop, that this was information that had been taken off of it. And we were getting flagged, and we were genuinely worried about our social media pages, which we rely on to reach our audience. We were concerned that they would get taken down, which would have been a massive problem for us and for many other right-leaning news sites that rely on social media platforms as a disseminator of content. And the media were ignoring all of this and downplaying the story and pretending it didn't exist because, remember, the reverence for the truth is not what's important, right? Regulating content and controlling the narrative with the express intent of pushing an agenda and getting something done, that's the goal. Berliner writes, in October of 2020, the New York Post published the explosive report about the laptop Hunter Biden abandoned at a Delaware computer shop containing emails about his sordid business dealings. With the election only weeks away, NPR turned a blind eye. Here's how NPR's managing editor for news at the time explained this the thinking. This is Berliner writing. We don't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories, and we don't want to waste the listeners' and readers' time on stories that are just pure distractions. But he says it wasn't a pure distraction or the product of Russian disinformation, as dozens of former and current intelligence officials suggested. The laptop did belong to Hunter Biden. Its contents revealed his connection to the corrupt world of multimillion dollar influence peddling and its possible implications for his father. The laptop was newsworthy. He says, but the timeless journalistic instinct of following a hot story lead was being squelched. During a meeting with colleagues, I listened as one of NPR's best and most fair-minded journalists said it was good we weren't following the laptop story because it could help Trump. This was an actual discussion being had in the NPR newsroom. Should we report on this credible story that we cannot disprove? There is no reason to believe it's false, but we shouldn't report on it because doing so could help Trump. And we're going into an election and we don't want Trump to win because we have spent the last 4 years trying to damage his presidency after he won against all odds. And we didn't think he was going to pull it off in 2016, but by golly, he did. And we're salty about it. So we've spent the last 4 years trying to take him down. And this is our opportunity. Publicly funded radio, so-called journalists having a discussion in a newsroom openly about what stories to report based on what candidate they wanted in office. Berliner goes on to blast NPR for not fessing up to their mistake after it turned out that the Hunter Biden laptop story was completely validated. Of course, that was a year after the election and after the damage was already done. I've said it before, and I'll say it till the cows come home. The Media Research Center conducted a study after the election of Biden voters, asking them if they had known about the Hunter Biden laptop story before heading to the polls. Of those who said they hadn't, a high enough percentage said that knowing the story would have impacted their vote. Based on our polling, proper, diligent, and honest reporting on that story likely would have changed the outcome of the 2020 election. Media manipulation and information censoring, that is how you steal an election. You don't have to rig a voting machine. You don't have to convince a bunch of illegals to show up. You don't have to stuff the ballot box with, you know, ballots from dead people. Media manipulation and information censoring is how you steal an election. And NPR was not only complicit in it, but an active participant. And they've never admitted to it. And even this guy who says he was not a Trump supporter and did not want Trump to win, voted against him, said that it was so glaring and so bad and so journalistically unethical that he can't stand for it. That's pretty bad. The bias continued, he says, Berliner says, all throughout the network's COVID coverage, where any notion of a lab leak being the potential culprit of the COVID pandemic was immediately dismissed, largely because it was Trump and people on the right who were suggesting it. So here's NPR summarily poo-pooing the story, this idea that COVID could have come from a lab leak because, you know, it just so happened to be in a Chinese town that was located right next to a lab that was studying coronaviruses of all things. But we couldn't take that into consideration. This had to be a bat crapping on a rat that had been roasted and left out for 3 days in a Chinese wet market, and just ignore that lab over there pumping away, right? Because they're, you know, guzzling up our tax dollars to study these things. We can't have all of that. And because that would mean that we're kind of complicit, and Anthony Fauci is kind of complicit, we can't talk about all of that. Trump and these crazy people on the right are suggesting that this was a lab leak, so they squashed this story, literally because of which side of the aisle was saying it. Similarly, the network's race-baiting agenda and claims of America's systemic racism problem were just a given, he says, not because they were based in fact. Berliner writes that after the death of George Floyd in 2020, quote, it would have been an ideal moment to tackle a difficult question. Is America, as progressive activists claim, beset by systemic racism in the 2020s? In law enforcement, education, housing, and elsewhere? We happen to have a very powerful tool for answering such questions, journalism. Journalism that lets evidence lead the way. But the message from the top was very different. America's infestation with systemic racism was declared loud and clear. It was a given. Our mission was to change it. So you've got Berliner exposing what the new CEO, Catherine Mayer, just came in as having said 2 years ago. The pursuit of truth is not the goal. The goal is to push an agenda to accomplish a mission. The goal is to get something done. That something being a progressive agenda, a progressive way of life. See the theme here? Never let your reverence for the truth get in the way of doing something. This is a toxic ideology that has infected this nation in some of the most dangerous and damaging ways. This race-baiting narrative that the leftist media were all too happy to push at face value. They didn't investigate whether it was a true claim. Is America actually systemically racist? Do we actually have a problem? No. They immediately ran with that, and they cherry-picked stories and information that backed up that narrative, and now it's an ideology that has infected this country like a cancer in some of the most dangerous and damaging ways. Throwing gasoline on the fire of this idea that America is systemically racist and must pay for the oppression of black and brown people was used to justify and fuel deadly riots all throughout 2020. Bodies were literally left dead in the streets, including some of those of children. Businesses were looted and burned to the tunes of tens of billions of dollars worth of damage. People's lives were decimated. And ever since then, that same race-baiting, hate-fueled cancer has been used to infect our education system, teaching, you know, black children that they are inherently victims, teaching white children that they are oppressors, you know, making sure that certain children are booted out of top-performing schools because they're not the right color, and we've got to make sure that there's a correct percentage. We've had children being denied national merit awards because it wasn't equitable enough. We've had millions upon millions upon millions of dollars in our education system alone spent on achieving quote-unquote equity goals that don't actually help black communities, that penalize non-black people, non-black children, simply because of the color of their skin. We've rewritten history to claim that white colonizers were the evil boogeymen of history. And, you know, before they showed up, all of the black and brown and indigenous folk were just, you know, frolicking about in a field of daisies and holding hands and singing kumbaya until, you know, the pilgrims showed up with their violence and their smallpox. And the dereliction of the media to do their job honestly and fairly and with integrity, the media's deliberate choice to trade truth-seeking for activism and still pretend that it's in any means journalism, this has real-world consequences that affect our society and impact our daily lives. And all Berliner is saying is if you're going to be a journalist, if you're going to hold yourself up as a news network that reports facts and information, you have to be fair and objective regardless of your personal likes and dislikes. You can hate Trump all you want, but your professional work, your reporting should always hinge on where the facts lead you. Don't like Trump? Fine. But that doesn't mean that the evidence suggests that he colluded with Russia. Want to vote for Joe Biden? Fine. But that doesn't mean that his son's laptop is not a credible story worth reporting. But that's not what's happening in our media. And in NPR's case, the situation is even worse because not only are they peddling biased garbage that they know is not actually factually based, that they know is one-sided, that is meant to advance a leftist agenda, but they actually receive federal funding to do it, and then they lie about it. So in 2023, NPR, you may recall, they got all huffy when Twitter, now X, branded them a government-affiliated news organization, which they are. But they got all mad because they don't like being called out as a state-sponsored propaganda machine, because that gets a little bit too close to that, you know, that objective truth that they're trying so hard to avoid. So they got all mad and they stormed off Twitter, except they are a state-sponsored propaganda machine. And here's how. So NPR claims that only about 1% of its $300 million budget comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is publicly funded. By the way, for those who are not really great at math, 1% of $300 million is still $3 million, which is not exactly couch cushion change. But even that's deceptive, right? Even the claim that, oh, well, it's just 1% of 300 million, it's only 3 million tax dollars, so we're not publicly funded. The Hill, which is by no means a conservative publication itself, wrote in a piece responding to that claim back in 2023 that while only about 1% of NPR's funding comes directly from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a massive chunk of its budget, about $90 million, in fact, comes from payments that it receives from local stations to broadcast NPR content. That money comes from, dun-dun-dun, the federal government. So this money, this taxpayer money that's been stolen from you and me and funneled through Congress to fund all of their little pet projects and their giant government machine, that taxpayer money, 90 million of it, is being channeled through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting into local TV stations through grants. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is actually mandated by federal law to funnel much of its taxpayer funding that they get to local radio stations, who then turn around and give that money to NPR to pay for their programming. So about a third of NPR's total budget is actually comprised of taxpayer dollars in one form or another. To claim that taxpayer dollars only fund about 1% of their budget is a lie. It's actually about a third of their budget. And they're using that money to hire nut jobs who openly reject the idea of objective truth and who say that seeking truth should take a backseat to getting things done, which, by the way, is not the job of a journalist, but we seem to have completely forgotten what a journalist is at this point. It's just another word that the left has, you know, redefined to mean activist with a notebook. And those tax dollars are being used to create state-sponsored propaganda that is being force-fed to the American people. And perhaps what's just as disturbing is the way that social media platforms are cracking down on political content to make it even harder for dissenting voices to be heard. So you've got NPR and you've got the media machine curating information that's being disseminated to the public, rejecting objective truth in favor of pushing an agenda and admitting it. And then you've got, on the other hand, social media sites, which many conservative news outlets rely on because that's the way people get their news. That's the way they get their information these days. Very rarely do you just go on a website and read a story. You see it on your Facebook feed. You see it on Instagram. You see it on Twitter or in a YouTube video or whatever. That's where the American public is getting their information. And social media platforms are now cracking down on political content that make it harder for people not in the mainstream media machine to give another side to the story, or to report on things that the media is ignoring, like the Hunter Biden laptop story. That's why it was so important what social media platforms did to that story. It squelched that story so thoroughly that much of the American public headed to the polls that year having never heard what was actually going on. And Instagram, for example, recently changed its user profile default settings to hide political content from accounts that you don't follow. This is problematic because it means that outlets like us here at MRC TV have a hard time gaining new followers and growing our accounts because our content can't be seen outside of our bubble. And Instagram does this on purpose under the guise of, oh, you know, our users don't want to see political stuff. They want more videos of puppy dogs and their neighbor's lunch and, you know, that influencer with the perfect kitchen cooking spaghetti from pasta that she made out of wheat from her own backyard or whatever, which is fine if that's your thing. But the intentional tamping down of content without actually asking users if that's what they want in their newsfeed is just another way to censor information that the left doesn't want you being exposed to. And they change these default settings without telling you or asking you because they don't want you to be aware that the information that you're now receiving is being regulated. It's being curated. They don't want you to see millions of illegal aliens pouring across the Southwest US border. They don't want you to see people shining a light on how gas and grocery prices are skyrocketing and have been since 2021. They don't want you seeing videos of Joe Biden falling down the stairs or stumbling all over his words like he just had an aneurysm right there on stage. They don't want you to see, you know, America-hating protesters screaming death to America in the streets. And they sure as heck don't want anybody telling you about the race-baiting, gender-bending, sexualized garbage that they're pumping into your kids' classroom and, you know, public school library and school assemblies. For example, did you hear about this one? Children in a public school classroom in Georgia were reportedly shown a video of a puppy dog. It's an actual puppet. It's not a real dog. It's a puppet that somebody is acting out with. And this puppet tells several other dog puppets that he's actually a cat. It's a bizarre video. It's a weird attempt to try to convince children to be inclusive of other children who don't identify with their biological gender. And to do so, they use a puppet of a dog who tells these other dog puppets he wants to meow. He wants to play with yarn. So this is according to libs of TikTok, the video, which shows a dog character named Barry, who sports a rainbow collar, because what else? And he's telling other puppet dogs that he likes to play with yarn and he likes to purr and meow. And this video was shown to fourth graders at Bramlett Elementary School in Auburn, Georgia. I'm going to play a little bit of this video. Remember, this is a puppy dog. This is a little puppet, and he's got a rainbow collar. Here's him explaining to other dogs why he thinks he's a cat. So in this video, a dog puppet named Gulliver, who is very confused at his new friend Barry's insistence on behaving like a cat, as you would be if you were a dog, is seen asking a human adult why his new dog friend thinks he's a cat. And this is how she responds. "It's not weird, it's just different." That's what she says. "A dog acting like a dog is not normal, just more common." This is insanity. This is what happens when you abandon objective truth. And now everybody can just make up truth according to what you want it to be, what you feel that it is. A dog is a dog. A boy is a boy and a girl is a girl. There is no question over these things. Even in situations of medical anomalies, there is an answer to be found. That is why we seek objective truth. There is truth to be found, and it exists outside of your feelings or my feelings or what we want to be true, what we wish were true, our opinions. There is objective truth, and we see that being abandoned in favor of whatever you want it to be. And that's being pushed by our media institutions. They don't want you to know these stories. They want you to think that anybody concerned about this stuff is just fear-mongering. Nobody's in your kid's classroom teaching them this stuff. And even if they were, it's you who's really the bigot. That's why when the media do report, and I'm using air quotes around the word report here, when they do report stories about so-called trans people, people suffering from gender dysphoria with a mental illness or a delusion, it's about the oppression of these poor people, right? That's the angle they take. These are just people who are trying to live their truth, which has replaced objective truth as the new holy grail. Social media sites will actually take down your content and penalize your page and delete your account if you share basic facts like men are men and women are women. That's hate speech. And this is how they control the narrative. They want you to believe that America is racist and must be dismantled and rebuilt from the ground up. Don't question it. The economy is great. Just shut up and fork over your credit card. Pay no attention to the prices over there. The border is secure. Nothing to see here. Joe Biden is sharp as a tack. Trans people are just trying to live their lives and not bother anybody. Your kid is safe as a clam in our government-run indoctrination camps. Go to work so you can pay your taxes and let the grown-ups and the elite handle the rest, because we're smarter than you anyway. We control the information you need to have. We will tell you what to think. You don't need to worry about all that. Remember Mika Brzezinski over on MSNBC? Controlling what people think? That's our job, right? This is what the media actually believe. This is their job, to spoon feed you a select narrative that there's no such thing as truth. They've abandoned truth as a concept. There's just the agenda. There's just getting something done. There's just the activism. The First Amendment is a pesky little piece of paper that just gets in the way of us forcing our ideology on the American people. And you've got Uri Berliner, the NPR editor, who wrote that piece in the Free Press. He was suspended for 5 days without pay as punishment for writing it. They would claim that he went and he spoke to media without authorization, which is against their policy. I'm sorry, but when you receive millions of dollars in taxpayer funding and you've got somebody that goes to the American public and says, this is the garbage you're being fed. You are being lied to. There's a narrative being spun here. This is not news. This is not journalism. This is carefully curated stuff. The definition of propaganda that is being generated by a machine with an agenda, and they're using your taxpayer dollars to do it. As far as I'm concerned, he did the public a service by exposing this, and good on him for not even being a Trump fan and having enough integrity as a journalist to say it. But they suspended him for 5 days without pay, because he broke their policy, right? Here he is, an anti-Trump leftist, calling out NPR for their dishonesty and their lack of journalism, and their response is not to be introspective. It's not to take a hard look at their own standards. That ship has sailed, right? NPR, like CNN, like, you know, MSDNC, the three big news networks, you know, the Washington Post, the New York Times, they've all planted their flag. They're not going to look at themselves, take a hard look at themselves, and go back to traditional, you know, responsible journalism. They don't want to. They have happily abandoned that, knowingly. So NPR suspended Berliner, so he quit. He quit. In his resignation letter, Berliner said he does not support calls to defund NPR. That is the one area where I heavily disagree, and I think anybody with any basic decency would. It is state-run propaganda. It is a government-affiliated media machine. It is funded by tax theft, and it is completely and utterly unnecessary at this point, if it was ever necessary in the first place. It should go. Either that, or it should find its own funding and stop siphoning it off of us just to turn around and lie. Lie to the American public. Meddle in elections. And PBS, frankly, should go with it. Somebody else can produce Daniel Tiger and Sesame Street. Frankly, maybe Elmo wouldn't be nearly as woke if whoever made the show actually had to compete in the free market. And with that, that's the Brittany Hughes Show for today. Hope you'll be back with me next Thursday for the next episode. In the meantime, head over to Apple Podcasts. Hit the subscribe button on the Brittany Hughes Show so you won't ever miss an episode. We'll just send you a little alert right there when a new one is ready to download. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Newsbusters podcast with Tim Graham. That one's on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Tim did an excellent job in his Wednesday podcast this week of breaking down this story from another angle. Fantastic listen, highly recommend it. That's the Newsbusters podcast. You can find that one on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We got lots of content for you guys, so you don't have to rely on places like NPR and CNN and all the other acronyms for lying liars who lie. So I hope you'll be back with me next Thursday for the Brittany Hughes Show. I hope you have a fantastic weekend and a blessed week.